The Unconventional Therapist's Guide to Nothing.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Unconventional Therapist. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined with my co-host here. His name is Greg. He's a crazy guy. He's kind of weird. A little unconventional.
Unconventional, yeah. Do we not use crazy? Is it okay to use crazy?
It's okay because like of our jobs and like people we know.
You're right. Throwing some bad words around, Dave. That's unlike you. In fact, I often refrain from using the F word around you. You know the F word, right, Dave?
Yes, Greg, I do.
Okay. And how powerful it can be.
Yes.
Like I think it's really important to consider this because just sticking this little word in front of some otherwise benign concept can really higher the stakes and make something relatively harmless become extremely dangerous.
Greg, what the hell are you talking about?
The F word, fundamentalists.
Oh, our topic today.
Yeah, that's right.
Wasting no time. Zero time, everyone.
Hey, you said there's a lot to get in, so I'm getting it in. It's a scary thing, right? It can happen in all faiths. It's just anytime, like when you hear that word, what does it mean to you?
I don't know. I never thought about it.
So I'll answer my own question then, because I did reflect and kind of ask myself that question. And it's just anytime, it's like all or nothing, I guess is what I'm thinking, right? Anytime something is, we think it's this way and we're not open to any kind of change. Like if you're closing your mind with your beliefs, and I think our minds should be open to wonder, right?
That's actually, now that I think about it though, I kind of view it as being closer to the meaning of the origin of the word. So like the thinking about like fundamentals being like the basics, right?
Mm-hmm. Now you're thinking about dribbling a basketball.
I am. The fundamentals of basketball. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. And boring. And not flashy.
No, but we're not going to be talking about basketball today. We're going to be talking about how the LDS became the FLDS.
Sure.
And how that spawned the monster Warren Jeffs.
We should be talking about basketball, though.
March
Madness is literally happening right now.
Dave, you know how many people, that's like worse than talking about politics. You're putting us on an island. No, it's good. I don't give a shit. And you do.
I do.
And then I think nonstop. Probably half of our audience are sort of on the same page.
Yeah.
March Madness. Okay.
Absolutely. You know, it's also not just basketball fans, but the gambling audience, the brackets and all that.
What's funny is I do that though. I do have my little sports book page where I dabble.
Yeah.
And I just use my intuition.
So has your week been pretty good, Greg?
No. Oh, you mean outside of gambling?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot complain at all.
Okay, that's good.
And how about you, Dave?
It's been pretty good. I guess it's been all right. It's been a little cold. We just got to spring and it doesn't feel like spring out.
Groundhog lied.
He did lie. It was actually warmer before it turned spring.
Yeah. It's too bad. Well, it fluctuates. That's New England. That's what happens here. Get used to it, right? If you don't like the weather, wait a minute. That's what we say. That's what we say here in New England.
It's our new slogan.
Yeah.
Get rid of all that.
So, I don't know. Is that enough small talk? Or do you want to talk about like the foliage or something? You want to talk about chowder? What's going on here?
Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
All right. So I'm going to talk to you about the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. Do you have any experience with this group?
Just that I love to reference that phrase from the commercials. Yeah. Brought to you by the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, no, I remember.
I like to throw that in every now and then.
That's an old school 90s commercial. It's like with sit, boo boo, sit. Good dog.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I like saying things like that.
Well, and there's a part of this religion, and we're just essentially talking about the Mormons here, where they do a lot of like coming up to your house and trying to sort of like Jehovah's Witness, a lot of door knocking, a lot of things like that. We don't really have to get into the dogma of all this because I did. And it's a sort of, and not to offend anyone, just like all religions can be. In my view, it seems a little off the wall, but I guess growing up Catholic, people could easily say that about us too, right? But there are a couple of important elements I have to mention for the purposes of this episode. We kind of have to set this up if we're going to talk about Warren Jeffs. So what made this fertile ground? So one belief is that the church leader or president is considered a modern day prophet. Now, Dave, you remember in CCD or whatever our Catholic upbringing, when they would talk about prophets, like these are people who have a direct contact with God, not unlike Moses, right? Someone who can have conversations with God on a regular basis.
Or Muhammad.
You're absolutely right. Or Isaiah, a little lesser known of the prophets. One belief, this elevates this person way over the rest of the group. So, and that doesn't just do it to the group. So it's like the whole group's like, wow, this person is above us. But what's dangerous is it kind of does it to the person too, right? It makes them start to feel like they're more powerful. They're above everyone else. And you start to develop personalities like we did with Countess Bathory or Madame Lalaurie, like these kinds of really evil people who became evil because they saw everybody as less than them. So that's one little key point that's going to be important in this. The other side of it is the practice of polygamy. So do you know what that is?
Of course.
So it's different than polyamory. It's something that we kind of see a lot. It's kind of common. I'm not really a huge proponent of it, but polygamy is a little bit different. Polygamy is when you can have multiple wives in this case. And this becomes a problem because the LDS, sort of like the Catholic Church, when every once in a while they'll be like, hey, you know what? Babies actually don't go to hell if they die, or it's fine to be gay. So it's usually a little bit late, but as the religion kind of changes with culture, it's sort of appropriate and time for it. So this is sort of happening in the 30s where it became inappropriate. It's always kind of been inappropriate, but it became glaringly inappropriate with in the 30s, and the LDS kind of banned polygamy, right?
Yeah.
So the residents of Short Creek and a few other places.
I believe it's pronounced Short Creek.
That's my fault. You know, I had that spelled out or phonetically, and I should have really touched on that. Short Creek. they refused to sign
the. If you watch any of the documentaries about this, everybody says Creek. It's kind of.
We're not doing that in the Creek. Yeah. We are not doing that in the Creek.
I was down by the Creek.
They refused to sign this oath renouncing polygamy, and they're led by this guy, John Barlow, who had four wives at the time. So obviously he's like, I've got these four wives. I'm in charge. Things are pretty good. And what's ironic here is John Barlow with his four wives, very conservative, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
A sparing amount of wives, not very many wives at all, which to me, it's like, holy geez.
I mean, I really didn't even know how outlandish it gets with all the wives. We're talking about like huge numbers, which I'll get to later with Warren Jeffs, but like even there's other names that like the more wives, the bigger figure you are, or the more respectable you are. It's crazy.
Yeah. It becomes like the kind of thing where do you even know them all?
It's like this thing where like, there's no way, and not to, you know, not to be too sexual, but there's no way you're actually like getting enjoyment from that many ladies at that point. Mm-hmm. Like you're just doing it now to be possessive.
Tell that to Ramses. Like. He had like 900 kids.
I mean, I'm sure they are having like intercourse with each one of them to some, like on their wedding day, but like what other enjoyment are you getting out of it?
Yeah. Like you could like walk by someone in your house if you've got like 60 something wives and be like, who are you?
Yeah. Wait, what's your name again?
I don't think I've met you before.
Yeah. So, there's no way they're like enjoying that. I don't know.
No. And so Barlow is guilty here because this.
Call me old fashioned, but I'd prefer to just have four, you know?
Yeah. Oh, listen, I'm a huge one at a time guy. That's why even when it's becoming sort of common to have polyamory.
I have so many jokes I want to make.
One at a time. Please. I mean, it's better that we refrain from joking, Dave. This is serious.
Yeah.
So this little fracture, and think about what's going on here. So this fracture happens And John Barlow doesn't really get on board. So this is sort of, this guy's the catalyst to this whole thing. He doesn't get on board because he's putting his individual needs as the leader way over the rest of the group. So he's not doing what's best for everybody. He's doing what's best for him. And that sounds very culty, right?
Sure. And it's also like that inability or that unwillingness to change kind of fits into everything that's wrong with, or like that negative view that so many people have with like the issue with religion.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't feel like it's catching up with the times enough. Then there's that idea, like maybe should it? Should the times keep up with religion, or should religion keep up with the times? I don't know.
That's actually a really interesting question. And I don't think I think people are screaming a clear answer, but I don't always think that's true. When you look at the horrific crimes, sometimes it's important to have, I think, guidelines. I think religion can play a really important role in people's lives when it comes to grief, when it comes to, you know, loss.
We see it all the time. It's people's spirituality that helps them get through some of the hardest times. Not everybody, but some people.
Right. So back to Barlow. It's not like he's going to his people at the Crick and saying, hey, look, this is an idea that the other group has. Should we do this? Let's take a vote. Of course, he's not going to do that, because you have to remember, he's the leader and his decisions are impervious to question. He's the prophet on earth. So he's talking to God face to face. And so when he makes the call, the people are like, okay, so if he makes the call, I'm 83 years old and I want to marry a 20-year-old, the people have to be like, okay, that's okay. And there's something else I wanted to touch on too before we even get into Warren Jeffs. Because people might be thinking, well, you know, sister wives, all this, like, who are we to say or outlaw polygamy? And I think that there's psychological cases to be made. So for women, right? Here's some of the things that come as a result of polygamy. OCD. Don't ask me why. Obviously, interpersonal sensitivity. That's going to be a problem. Depression, anxiety, paranoia, psychosis. The fashion. Even the Amish, I think, would have a couple of jokes about their, you know, their outfits. But above all, Dave, honestly, all kidding aside, I think the self-esteem element of this, you're always putting yourself, like, what does that say to women, where it's men can have whichever women they want, as many women as they want, and women don't have a choice in that.
There's a really like another really interesting conversation that's happening here too, is most of the like reasons for following the religion and the benefits of being faithful benefit the men, not the women. There's conversations about what happens to the men in the afterlife and what kind of, like, you know, what benefits they reap from living this lifestyle. There's very little mention, if any, to how this benefits the woman. They're just they're conditioned to play subservient roles. And I think that, like, most of the ones that I've heard, like, from, like I said, there's some documentaries, you'll hear some interviews out there of people who are, you know, still around today that, you know, existed during this or kind of broke away from this or still are involved in this. And it does sound like a lot of them have, like, a question in there. Like, they kind of understand that, like, oh, this is really, like, I can never elevate to a certain level. Everything's dictated to me. Any advancement I want to make is, like, has to be run by the prophet, and, like, I have no say in my own life. It sounds like they question it, but so many of them just go along with it because it's what they're conditioned to do.
Well, hey, look, when you're a little girl and you have your dad and then you have your eight moms, you know, you only know what you know from what you experience in your life, right? So if that's all you know, it's actually amazing at all. And that's why I think isolating is so important. These leaders, they isolate these people. They want to keep them, you know, dated. They want to keep them off the internet. They want to keep knowledge. They create their own schools, right? Because they don't want them to know, hey, look, there's possibilities out there for you. Not every woman's life is like this. And it's amazing that any of them had that sense. It really speaks to something, you know, intrinsic inside people, where somehow they were like, I don't know, this seems like there's more
that's exactly what, like, I pulled away from that too. It's that idea that this isn't something that's, like, natural to who we are or innate to who we are as humans. Like, when just having that question or being like, there was a few of them that I heard interviewed who were verbal about like having the thought like, oh, it's really gross that I'm actually marrying this 80-year-old man. Or I was really scared that I was going to have to be intimate with this really old person. So, I mean, clearly the fact that they even have those questions after being conditioned, after just being considered to be the norm, like you said, there's no outside exposure influencing that. That speaks highly.
It does. It's amazing. So it does kind of like we are, there is a way you're supposed to live and this isn't it.
Yeah. Right? This is one of the first cult stories that I've really listened to that you hear that so frequently versus most of the other ones. There's not a lot of questioning going on.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you know? It's funny that you say cult stories because it is a cult. It is. But when you think of a cult, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that amazingly charismatic leader. And in this cult, you do not have that. But he's lucky to have this generational trauma where these people are indoctrinated for generations before things are set up for him. And now I think that's appropriate for us to start to skip ahead towards Rulon at least, or Warren Jeffs.
Yeah. So Rulon is Warren Jeffs' father. And he becomes the fundamentalist leader, prophet, at some point in time. And, you know, when Warren is born, he was born in December 3rd of 1955. You know, Rulon's already the prophet. So he's born into this family where Warren is the 14th child amongst his brides. But, I mean, he's rumored to have had, you know, many more, like 65 siblings. Mm-hmm. But only seven of his siblings were full-blooded siblings. And he was closest with his four full-blooded brothers, I guess you would say. Some interesting things about Warren is he was born premature, 2 months. And at that time, in 1955, the survival rate of premature children, super low. So right there, Rulon insisted that Warren was a miracle because he survived and felt that he was destined for great things. So, you know, there's this idea that Rulon, his dad, had kind of maybe already envisioned Warren kind of stepping into a prophet role when he gets older or having some greater purpose. And then there's this idea that as Warren is growing up and, you know, Rulon's, you know, informing people of, you know, how special he is, he's already getting this inflated version of who he is and expectations of how people are supposed to interact with him. And, you know, I'm sure he's getting that treatment from his siblings. And, you know, everyone's kind of looking at him like he's special.
Yeah, doesn't that sound a lot like what Jim Jones's mom did for him?
Sure.
It's almost exactly the same. So when you think of Little Prince Syndrome, this is like King Tut, Child King, Prince Joffrey level spoiled little narcissist, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what's ironic about him? It's like you say he's a premature baby. He like will live his whole life looking like a premature baby with glasses on. Like he is not, without this setup, he would never have attracted the attention of one single woman. But
sure.
Instead, I mean, he becomes
they create it.
Yeah.
I mean, can you look at any of the individuals involved in this story and say that they look like they would have attracted that many wives?
No.
And, you know, not to be mean, but like, you know, a lot of the individuals I saw, I was like, I guess they can have that lifestyle. Like, I don't envy that at all.
It's almost medieval and so scary. The young wives with these grizzled old men, like kissing them. And it's just so strange.
But they all look very cookie cutter, too. There's no diversity for reasons, you know, like just they're not very accepting of outside cultures and race. That's kind of like just who they are. They all have this stupid hairstyle, like the women, where it's like a little bouffant, I guess you would say. I don't even know how you describe it. It looks like, you know, just so old fashioned and dumb. I was not envious when I saw like, oh, you had 65 wives. Oh, those 65. All right.
Yeah. But honestly though, what's her name? Rebecca Wall. She actually now she's
well. I mean, yeah. Now they're not looking so cookie cutter. They're looking like their unique selves, which
she's
is
not wearing like curtains.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, you said that Little Prince syndrome, and it's funny because he would order his siblings around and he would tell on them to Rulon if they resisted. So it was kind of like that idea, like, you're going to listen to me, and if you're not, dad's going to come here and punish you.
Dad's going to tell God.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a few interesting things. Like, I know you said that he doesn't have some of the qualities that we've seen with previous leaders, but there are some qualities that I think set Warren up for like what we end up seeing happen, or just to even be in the leadership role. One of those things being like, he has adaptability, but he's also super observant of people and like identifying strengths and how he can use them for his benefit. So for example, like with his brothers, he would be able to identify like which one is the strongest. So if I ever have any issues, I'm going to be able to sway that brother into helping me, and he's going to protect me, or, you know, stand up for me, or push my way into something because he's the strongest. And he has like that ability to do that. And I think it almost just people identifying that, or the way that he's able to interact with people, kind of sets him up for people to listen to him.
Like, well, it's Machiavellianism, right? Sure. Even when Rulon's dying after his stroke and everything, Warren's able, he only brings certain people to see his father, and he'll only let his father have certain conversations. He even begins to abuse and control his father. And I don't want to get ahead of
him. Oh, for sure.
He's really doing that too.
Yep. He uses his role as being his father's favorite in order to get people to do what he wants and to sway them by promising them that they'll be in good standing with the father if they do that. So like very, very clever, I guess you would say. There's something about him that's manipulative. Like, he knows how to, it's dark psychology, right? Like, he knows how to make people do the things he wants them to do. And, you know, it's probably easy too, because they all know each other and they're all familiar with each other. So everyone probably knows like what he went through and his father's view of him, because his father is the prophet. So it's a big deal. And, you know, the FDLS community was very like controlled and isolated. They rarely associate with outside the FLDS community. From what I understood, they were like, they would be like friendly, but they wouldn't like spend time with people outside of the community. And there was a school, the Alta Academy, which Warren attended. And that is like the big FLDS school in Salt Lake City, Utah. So that he attended, and there I had read that he was very into his studies. So he's a more rigid-minded, which fits that whole fundamentalist thing, right? Like by the book kind of guy. But he knew that if he was only that way, he wouldn't attract people. So he was able to like alter his personality when it became helpful or useful to be able to interact with others and adapt to different settings, even though it wasn't like necessarily who he was. So he could joke around when needed to, but like typically he'd be that guy that's like very by the book, studying, probably thinking about ways to advance himself.
Just observing people and understanding how you're supposed to act is very antisocial elements to this.
Yes.
And maybe like there was a brain development thing too. Like there's a lot of things that could have been going on
with with him being premature. It'd be interesting to know that. But also I was hearing this information. I think this is pretty helpful as well. There are studies that show that individuals who grow up in large families, polygamists especially, develop emotional and psychological problems more often than children from monogamous families. They are prone to hostility, paranoid ideation, externalizing problems, and acute affective disorders. And it's not uncommon for them to engage in manipulation or violent behavior to set themselves apart from their siblings or gain parent attention.
Okay.
Super interesting, super fitting. All of those kind of fit into Warren Jeffs.
Adler would love this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He eventually becomes the principal of this Alta Academy at 20 years old, and he serves as principal for the Academy for 20 years. 21 years old, and he's principal.
Yeah. That's because Daddy. God said that's cool.
Yes.
And this, you know, this is really topical for us talking about this academy just because of the grooming he's able to do from this point of view. He's got all the children in the FLDS at his fingertips. And, you know, this is where we'll kind of lead in that, yeah, he is an awful pedophile and he's going to be sodomizing boys, abusing girls. Just people are objects to this, to him. Like he feels nothing. Yeah. And it reminds me this is on a grander scale, but have you been hearing a lot about this Nickelodeon show?
Yeah.
You know, it's super interesting where like, it's kind of the same thing. Show business is, well, go ahead and tell on me. Like, what is that going to do?
Yeah.
Right. My dad talks to God. Soon I'll be talking to God. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter. It's terrifying.
Right. There's a lot coming out right now about that Nickelodeon stuff. And, you know, there's some people that are kind of like, who maybe have been saying it for a while and maybe it was kind of dismissed, but now they're kind of like, oh, like, I believe Corey Feldman, I saw something from him today saying like, oh, finally some of this is coming out. So yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of gross things that are going to happen while he's at this academy. From what I read about him, his style of being a principal was like, he would be accessible for help. But he was also known for disciplinary habits.
Mm-hmm.
And he would order the girls to stay sweet, quote unquote, by avoiding boys, which is, there's something that comes up very frequently about like the whole marriage thing with him. He's territorial. And he truly takes that idea that the more wives you have, the more respectable or the bigger, more prominent role you have in our community. He takes that and like inflates it by 1,000. Like it's almost to a ridiculous and embarrassing amount of wives, and like the territorial aspect of it is insane.
You know, and the way he's treating these kids, you mentioned something interesting there. So he's a disciplinarian, but he's also someone where you can feel like you can kind of talk to and he can have tender moments with you.
Yes,
and that's all on purpose.
Yes.
It keeps these kids in a state of confusion where like they can't develop their own identity. They don't know when it's safe to sort of let loose and just be kids, or they're going to be disciplined. They don't know if it's okay. You know, oh, he loves me. And then like, imagine like he loves me so much. I'm not getting any love at home. And now he's disciplining you. Like what is that doing to your psyche, right? What is that doing to your self-esteem? What your worth? It's really damaging. And this is, kids are, whatever they're learning there, they're being indoctrinated into this lifestyle where they're going to be controllable forever.
And one of the allegations that comes out at some point talks about some of that behavior that Warren and even some of his brothers engaged in. So his nephew, Brent Jeffs, alleges that he was sexually assaulted by Warren and his brothers when he was only 5 years old. And that he states that they would remove him from classes, take him to the bathroom where he was assaulted and told that he would face eternal damnation if he ever spoke about the incidents.
Mm-hmm.
So he has claimed that multiple children, including his brother, received the same treatment from quote unquote Uncle Warren. That's how they would refer to him in the school.
So he's abusing his own brother. He's going to be abusing
his nephew and his nephew's brothers. I know it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he would even get his brothers to engage in some of this. I don't know if it was just to assist or actually getting involved in the actions.
Well, his brother Roy was abused by Warren.
Okay.
And ended up, you know, committing suicide. There's a lot of suicide in this FLDS, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on to like the next, I guess, prominent event, Warren's father, Rulon, passes away in 2002. At this point, Warren is not slated to be the next in line to be the prophet, if you were to go by like age or anything like that. So he ends up becoming next in line just by basically powering his way in, by stating he is the next one and getting others to affirm it by, you know, with his vindiction. They see it and they feel that he is also the next one to become the prophet. And he's
probably setting himself up the whole time when he's only allowing certain people to talk to his father. Like he's only allowing certain people access to his father. He takes control of all his siblings.
Yep.
He takes control of the whole FLDS all through manipulation while doing so, like putting the pieces in place while his father is alive. And when he dies, One of his quotes is, "Nobody touched my father's wives."
Yeah, he said, "I won't say much, but I will say this: hands off my father's wives."
Oh yeah,
and then he tells the women, "You woman will live as if father is still alive and in the next room." Creepy. So his father survived by 20 wives, and Warren ends up marrying all but two of them.
Yeah,
and the one of them refuses to marry him, so he ends up banning her from marrying ever again, and the other one, flees the church and just goes away because she doesn't want to marry him.
Yeah, Rebecca Wall.
Yeah,
very important because she'll be her and her sister will be part of the people who are bringing charges and being witnesses against him, and that's when I like to say the walls were closing in on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, so he goes on the marrying spree, I guess you would say.
Does. Yeah, he does.
You know, it's said by the time of his arrest, he has about 70 wives, and some of them as young as 6 years old.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. The other thing he does that's really interesting is he starts to cut men out of the church, basically kind of like just dependent on how he feels about them. But it's almost like he's limiting his competition for wives.
Yep. He can take other people's wives if he wants them, if he needs them. He can take your daughter away. I mean, there's incentive for men to leave this anyway. But if you're indoctrinated into this, you've been through the school, you've seen this go on, like you've been part of this for, you know, since you were born. It's all you know. So you're thinking when Warren Jeff says, "I need your daughter, your 8-year-old daughter, to marry me," that's God saying that.
Right.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If, you know, but like, here's the thing. I wonder how much of this was like everyone was buying, because he was not like, he was upsetting some people, you know, mm-hmm. and like you had mentioned, he was actually preventing people from being able to talk to his father. There's some brothers that were not happy about that, you know, that he's preventing that conversation, them from being able to see their own dying father.
Yeah, but they also see the writing on the wall, Dave. You got to remember, this is like other cults in the sense where you're bought into this. It's all you know. Where are you going? You know what I mean? Like, where are you going if this doesn't work out? Everything is tied to this. Your livelihood, your money is in this. Your home is into this. Your family, if you're ostracized, if you're cut out from this, it's like being the Amish. You know what happens to them. You know, it's if they're not part of that group, they're done.
Death.
Death in some case, sure. Yeah. Or so, it'll be really hard, I guess, is what we're saying here.
Oh, yeah, that too. Greg, what kind of leader was he in this church?
An awful, narcissistic dictator. Like a combination of a tyrant and a pedophile. How's that?
Tough.
That's not great.
That's horrible.
It's bad to be either one, but the...
Yeah, bad would be the word, I guess, right?
Yeah, so bad, yeah. Bad.
So bad.
I disagree. With his...
He has a lot of rules. He continues that principal-like role where he's a disciplinarian. He mandates clothing, who they can marry, and as you mentioned way earlier, restricts television and internet.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a keen fashion sense too, as you can see from all the footage.
Why does he do all these things?
Control.
Is that it? Just control? Like, what benefit does he get from cutting out internet, television?
Isolation. I mean, what was the benefit of the slaveholders to not allow, you know, to break up families and to not allow knowledge and reading and education, right? Limit the access to what you could have, limit access to potential. So you think that this is all there is.
Yes. All right. So that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you know, you think about things we're seeing on cable television in, you know, early 2000s or late 90s. You're seeing people live lives that are way more desirable than these roles that they're living. Like, you'll see women in power roles. You'll see, mm-hmm. you know, women, you know, in dating shows actually picking their suitors. Like, what? Yeah. You know, they're not told who to marry. It would challenge so many of the beliefs of this church, and it would almost act as a poison, right? To what the messages that they're trying to instill in all their followers.
They might see a dominatrix and their heads would explode. What is that?
I'm a what? What?
Yeah. Excuse me.
So yeah, there's a lot of benefits to doing this, and this is very common in a lot of the cults that we've covered so far. Is that lack of outside access to the real world? You know, to the world that is progressing around them. So yeah, it having these old school beliefs helps continue this church and benefits the men of the church.
Yeah.
Especially Warren Jeffs.
And he didn't really, like, he's going to be the downfall of this because he's flying too close to the sun there, right? He's wanting too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is eventually with this first time. I don't know if you're getting into this part yet, but he's brought to trial on these, you know, sodomy charges, the abuse of the young women. This is his first trial. And of course, you know, it's not even worth really mentioning because he gets off really easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Back down. In 2005. So as I mentioned, the first lawsuit was Brent Jeffs that, you know, is mentioned often. But in 2005, he was charged in Arizona with sexual assault on a minor and the conspiracy to commit sexual misconduct with a minor for arranging in 2001 a marriage between a 14-year-old girl and her 19-year-old first cousin. The girl testifies that she begged Roulon to let her wait until she was older and choose another man for her, and that Roulon was apparently like sympathetic to this plea, but Warren was not, and he forced the marriage to go through. So she alleged that the suitor that was picked for her often raped her and that she repeatedly miscarried. So super traumatic experience to go through for this young girl, you know, at this time. And just that idea of being forced to do these things against your will. And it's just like the lack of like hope that someone must feel when they're under these conditions is like,
well, yeah, Dave,
it's so startling.
It is, but it's goes beyond that a little bit because it goes against what you feel inside as like what could be right. But also, this is what God wants for you. This all-loving being. The dogma is. That's what you're believing. God wants this for me, though. He wants me to feel this way. And then, like, how important can you ever? What's your self-esteem going to be like?
Right.
So when your self-esteem's so low, like, you'll take any kind of treatment
when it's all you know.
It's all you know
because as we mentioned, there's no exposure to anything outside of this for them. So it's like literally all they know. And that's, you just have to like go along with it, even if it feels terrible, even if you're pleading the please don't let this happen. Ultimately, you're being told it's going to happen. And you just assume that's my role. And that's where, you know, you mentioned like suicide being a prominent thing. I'm surprised it's not even more prominent. I'm surprised it's not just taking over as a plague, like a plague. But again, I guess if you're just conditioned to believe that this is what you're supposed to do, and, you know, I'm sure that they consider suicide a sin. Which, you know, I'm kind of guessing on that one.
Well, unless you're Warren Jeffs, because he'll eventually try, which is ironic.
But yeah. And I'll get to that in a second, because I think that might be for a different reason.
Yeah. Well, listen to this, though. And just we'll move on from the motives of Jeffs here. But essentially, in a nutshell, lowering the value of everyone around you and raising your own value. That's his form of manipulation.
Yeah, it's his MO.
Yep, women are nothing. I am as close to God as you can be. No one's ever going to, he'll never be alone. He'll always be in charge.
Happy Women's History Month, everyone.
Yeah.
We just did this amazing episode on Joan of Arc, and here we are talking about like the complete opposite. Well, more of the same, men trying to control, but like women actually having to unfortunately just fall into these roles. Yeah. I mean, there are a number of women who come forward and who identify how wrong all this was and are able to speak to it, you know, later.
Yeah. But
during the time, it's like unfortunate that this is just what's happening.
Right.
So I mean, Warren, it becomes almost like a fugitive. And well, he is a fugitive. What am I saying? He is a fugitive. So, you know, he gets away with a lot, but he's constantly running. And as he's running, he's constantly having to make new moves, but he doesn't ever stop with his mission and with directing his followers. so he's receiving all these lawsuits by men who are were excommunicated. And then there's the sexual assault claims. And now he's under scrutiny by the FBI. And he tries to disappear.
This is after that trial that we talked about. This is after he moves the cult to El Dorado, Texas, this yearning for Zion Ranch. It's just because he wants to be in a really rural area far away from everyone else. But this isn't even far enough. I mean, people are catching on. People are seeing these wives and thinking things are weird. And there's constant phone calls, constant complaints from ex-members, constant complaints from just the community. And you're right. Like, it becomes one of these things where the FBI starts to get involved.
Yeah. So he's bouncing around from, you know, all these different FLDS compounds. He's using disguises like wigs and sunglasses. He has burner phones, and he's like using cash instead of card to like stop, you know, prevent any trail. And he ends up making it onto the FBI's 10 most wanted list in 2006 that this has become so large for the FBI trying to track him down. And but the thing is, the government's difficulties with catching him actually only strengthens the belief that people, his followers, have in him as truly being this instrument of God. The fact that they can't catch him makes them feel even more strongly about his role.
Yeah, because I'm sure in some vague Nostradamus way, it lines up with some kind of scripture, like they will persecute the new prophet or some kind of line like that. I can just imagine it, right?
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting because in this pursuit of him, they do a raid on one of these, of that place, the Yearning for Zion Ranch. And it's, that could have been another Waco type situation.
Yeah.
But apparently there are a lot more. This cult is a lot. Warren Jeff. He's a lot of things, but he's no David Koresh.
Well, he's not arming all of his followers. He's not right. even doing like what, you know, with Heaven's Gate after Waco, when they were like, oh, we got to like come up with like this more aggressive plan. He's not doing any of that. Because he's not really super concerned about anything other than himself. Like, it feels like there was this sense with Koresh and Marshall Applewhite that, like, the following, as much as, like, they were, you know, definitely benefiting from everything, they were concerned with their following, I think, to some extent. Like, as much as David Koresh did some really terrible things and also, you know, very similar stuff to this, I do get the sense that Koresh also, like, had a sense of caring about how his following and keeping them together. I don't know that Warren Jeffs cares about anybody in his following.
Right. And like, there's also that question of mythomania. Does Warren Jeffs believe his own lies? Do you think he does? Do you think he really, well, he must not think he talks to God. You have to fake that, right?
Right. Right.
What was that?
I don't get the sense that, so he feels different in that way where like, it doesn't get the sense that he has like this delusional idea that he's actively talking to God or getting messages from God. It just feels like he has a sense of entitlement and he knows he can use his placement in the family and, you know, what he was born into to his advantage and he can reap as many benefits as possible.
Mm.
So in 2006, there's a random pullover in Las Vegas because he has like these temporary license plates on this Escalade that weren't visible.
Is that what they call it, though? A random pullover?
I guess. No, I mean, it's a pullover for a real reason. Yeah. But like nothing to do with the things that he's actually like, you know, wanted for.
Yep.
When they pull him over, they end up finding $50,000 in cash, multiple cell phones, no weapons. And he has one of his wives and a brother riding. They end up getting released after being questioned. But, you know, he at this time is held. But nothing really comes out of this one either. I don't know. There's this whole long litany of like allegations and arrests and new allegations being made against him. What ends up like happening during all this time? Does he just give up on everything? Does he?
Well, I think the real nail in the coffin in the courtroom was, and this is an awful thing to even say, is they played a tape for the jury. Yeah. And it was a 12-year-old being raped by Warren Jeffs. And in it, you can hear him saying, feel the spirit of God.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, God. Like, this guy.
I'll be honest with you. The charges against him are get a bit confusing because there's so many happening all in this short, condensed time. And there's also all these mishaps. So, like, the charges against him in Arizona ended up being dismissed because one of the victims refuses to testify. But then, you know, he ends up being convicted on 2 counts of sexual assault of a child and sentenced to life in prison in Texas the following August.
Good for raping, Texas.
For raping a 15-year-old child bride and aggravated sexual assault against a child for raping another 12-year-old child. So it's convoluted. It's confusing. There's a lot of like missed opportunities, it feels like. But eventually, yes, he is arrested in Texas and good.
Yeah, great. I mean, he can't believe it. He tries to commit suicide in his cell. Do you know about that?
Yeah. So there's a few things. So while he's in prison, he's continuing to issue directives to his followers. So he doesn't just stop because he's in prison. It continues. And he actually releases a book called Jesus Christ's Message to All Nations, which calls for his release. And he starts to forewarn his followers for the end of the world in 2012. The lawsuits start to pile up while he's in prison. And it said that he suffers like multiple nervous breakdowns. He attempts to hang himself in Arizona in 2007. And he wound up in a medically induced coma after a lengthy hunger strike in 2011. And in 2019, they say he suffered a breakdown that conveniently left him unable to testify in a lawsuit against him by a woman who claimed that he sexually abused her when she was a child. Now, there are some thoughts that some of this, or he maybe makes claims that some of this, like him trying to commit suicide, was testing his followers to see if they would, how they would respond, to see if they would come to action or if they would lose belief, trying to test their faith. That's kind of the claims he makes about some of these. Whether that's accurate, whether he was just losing it, whether he was feeling suicidal because his life is crashing down and he's starting to lose hope, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he actually has like an explanation for some of the behavior.
Of course he does. You know, I remember this. What I remember most about this, though, is the fish out of water element of the wives just kind of standing around and like police are talking to them in their uniforms and it's juxtaposed with these. It's almost like they're out of time. Right. And I remember that and like the braids and the, you know, it looks like, I don't know, what does it look like? It's hard to even explain. They all look like, I guess I'm kind of really wrapping up, but remember that show Big Love, which was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of like does this story in a sense. There's definitely like a rule on Jeff's. I don't think there's much of a Warren Jeff's character.
Yeah.
That,
and you know, what's funny, like is for like, obviously we're not endorsing any of these beliefs. We don't believe in any of that. Idea of like the gender roles that they try to produce in this, or you know, the polygamy aspect. But Rulon actually seems like he was sort of a likable guy.
So the benevolent leader aspect of that. So it's you know, that's what you need. You need someone who's going to be the good guy if you want something like this to work.
Yeah.
Because it's actually amazing that there are kings in history or like rulers that don't let that power get to them, but it's because that's what happens.
And even as Rulon got older, so he's still, they were still having like, we didn't even mention this, but Warren was actually having Rulon married in his 80s.
Yeah.
And to the point though, and this is super interesting, Rulon didn't even want to marry.
I know
woman.
He couldn't do anything with them.
He was actually like putting his fist down, like upset, telling people, I'm not marrying anyone else.
He
like,
said, no he more young girls. It. No more young girls.
So there was an idea that like he even started to lose his voice to Warren. Like Warren had become so big. And
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. This prophet, this leader, no longer feels they even have the power over their own son.
Mm-hmm.
Their son has become so powerful or so greedy with power, you know? I wrote down a few notes, Greg. Just I wanted to read some of these because like this will also kind of highlight some of the I put a quote unquote shitty views of the FLDS under Warren's reign. In 2001, in a sermon, Jeff stated that the people grew so evil, the men started to marry the men and the woman married the woman. This is the worst evil act you can do next to murder. It is like murder. Whenever people commit that sin, then the Lord destroys them. So clearly talking about same-sex marriage in 2001. So that's, you know, one view that they have, but they are also incredibly racist, which is something that is commonly referenced about the FLDS community under Warren's, at least under Warren's reign, maybe and prior, I believe. I don't know where it stands today, and I'm not going to speak on that.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of quotes. The black race is the people through which the devil has always been able to bring evil onto the earth. In 95, in a priesthood history class, Jeff states that Cain was cursed with a black skin, and he is the father of the Negro people. He has a great power, can appear and disappear. He is used by the devil as a mortal man to do great evils. If you young people were to marry a Negro, you could not be a priesthood person, even if you repented. You could not stay in this work. So
I think I know why he's coming after black people in this way.
He's threatened.
Well, yeah. So it's like that Eddie Murphy Delirious bit, or it's either Delirious or the other one, similar. They're like kind of like right back to back, but whatever. It's wrong. Something about, he does the Amityville thing where, like, you know, white people would stay for this and black people would go right away. How long? Like, this is, like, it seems like a, like something only that could only happen in this, like, weird, like, white people thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
black people,
yeah,
are way too cool for this kind of shit, dude.
But it, you know, again, though, it comes to this idea that he also is limiting the people that can be part of this, almost because he feels like, hey, if we allow interracial marriage, that's more competition for me against for wives, and also more competition for me in general as far as being a leader and who might challenge me with my leaderhood, right? So it really does benefit him to keep their community limited, isolated, and controlled. So he knows who comes in, he knows who he's getting out. I'm sure when we talked about the excommunicated men, I guarantee you all those men were people who probably questioned his leadership.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
We haven't really heard that too much in previous. I'm trying to think of, like, where that existed in some of the previous, like, cults that we've talked about. We haven't really heard that so much.
I mean, a little bit in Waco, Koresh kind of taking people's wives.
Yeah, you know? That part, but, like, not, he didn't really get rid of the men. He just kind of made them, he basically, like
docile.
Yes. Yeah. He emasculated them.
That's right.
With Jim Jones, it was quite the opposite. Jim Jones was like, I want all diversity.
Yeah.
You know, actually, if you, the more minority you are, the more you're probably going to, like, agree with some of my preachings, because it really spoke to them. And then you got Heaven's Gate, where they were literally going on a cross-country tour to recruit as many people as they could.
The Jim Jones thing is, like, that's like coming the years following the Harlem Renaissance that we're talking about. And it was a very sort of socialist movement, and he was a socialist leader. So sort of interesting that, you know what we didn't mention, though, a lot of, there's a, like, Warren Jeffs added a lot of ritualistic kind of stuff to this, where it would be like sex in front of the elders and groups to watch.
Okay.
And, like, that is,
tell me more.
That becomes, like, then you start thinking of, like, this is sort of like, I don't know, whenever you say ritual, it starts to feel really evil, right? Mm. A ritual, like, you know, the first time a girl loses her virginity, it's like in front of people.
Yeah.
That is dark as hell.
And you know what's funny? So for something that's so built on, like, God and Jesus and all, like, I don't know about you, if they, I actually, do they believe in Jesus? That seems like a ridiculous question.
Yeah.
I don't hear them talking about
the Church of Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, duh. What am I thinking? But then none of the preachings I hear them reference God a lot, but I didn't hear them reference Jesus. So, I mean, in a religion that's kind of ingrained in that, there's a lot of stuff that almost seems very, like, different. What am I trying to think of? Before, like, we talked about, like, the Catholic religion taking on all these holidays. Like, where did Christmas come from?
The pagans.
Pagans.
Yeah.
It feels very pagan almost, versus, even though it's something that's built in, like, this Christian mindset.
True.
Like, kind of the opposite of what the Christians would follow. You know?
Yeah, it's almost like they're going backwards.
Yeah. like rituals and it's very strange.
You know what's interesting is he still has his following. It's like obviously dwindling to the point where at this point, Dave, I think that we have more followers than Warren Jeffs, which is, you know, pretty pathetic for him.
And us.
And us, yeah.
And we have to make that comparison. So, I mean, yeah, terrible, terrible overall.
Yeah, it's because now I'm thinking like next time someone says Warren Jeffs hardly has any followers, I'd be like, well, I mean, he's got a decent amount.
Warren Jeffs.
Yeah.
Still alive, still in prison.
So if you're not a charismatic guy and you always wanted to be a cult leader, maybe you're not that good looking. Maybe you were born a little early. Maybe you have 20. you could still do this. Like, I mean, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. That's always going to be true. So here we go.
Yeah. So does he still have the possibility of parole in Texas?
Maybe. I don't know.
So I was just reading because in Utah, he had the possibility of parole after 10 years, but that was overturned. But in Texas, it still says he had the possibility of parole after 27 years, and I don't see overturned. So I'm curious.
Yeah, well, he's like an old, like...
He is old.
Little worm now.
Yeah, he is old.
I don't think much going on. He's like in his 80s, isn't he?
Yeah, and he looks old.
Yeah.
He is nerdy looking too. Like he
really is. And I don't like to say that, you know, It's just, man, this guy, he is not a good looking guy.
No, nope. Unfortunate for him. He's 68.
Oh,
1955. He looks old, right?
Then. Really? You were saying he looks old for 80. You know, sister wives are still a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's hey, to each their own, but I don't know. Polygamy, polyamory.
If someone's going to I could care less. Like It's more about the idea of being forced into it. Like nobody and you know it polygamy I believe is banned in every state. From what I was hearing, Utah has more recently lightened the penalty for engaging in it. But it's still illegal, and that was like his case to try to get out of or like against it. The argue against it was like, you know, it's null and void. There's no
honestly, Dave,
talking around.
Watch the show. Remember, like what you've done to me with Chinua Achebe, that book.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, making me kind of like dive into certain like that. Like I love what that did to my brain, because if you watch that show, Big Love.
Mm-hmm.
You might be, you know, advocating for polygamy to be legal. I loved that show. It was so good. And like, you know, it seemed like you could do it in the right way and it was okay. But
yeah, it's a little glorified, right?
Because it is a show after all.
Yeah. But I mean, there's plenty of people who engage in like polyamorous relationships and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what they're.
No, but yeah. I'll tell you what.
Not for everyone.
Greg. I can't be.
You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. Just because we did this research doesn't mean you have to do it, Greg. Remember?
I just think that like human nature doesn't allow for that to end well, I think.
You know, I agree for majority of us. I feel like there's stuff will come up that will probably have that go down in a pile of flames.
Yeah.
I would guarantee there are cases where people have been able to have those kind of relationships and been able to work through them just fine.
And if you're a listener and that's how you feel, set us straight with
a
star review.
Yeah, I would be interested in hearing people's discussions on, you know, for people who have had really successful relationships or are in them currently, what that's like and what do you have to have as a human quality in order to be able to even do that? That maybe other people don't have. So, all right, that's Warren Jeffs. That's the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. Crazy topic.
Crazy topic, Dave. But good topic.
Yeah, interesting. That is our Easter episode, as you probably all guessed. But just, you know, talking about religion, it's Easter. Mm-hmm. Felt appropriate, I guess.
Pastels.
Cadbury. There's a lot of pastels in their outfits.
That's right. It's always Easter on the crick.
On the crick. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you have the time and the energy, we would love to hear your thoughts. Reach out to us, but more importantly, make sure to leave a rating and review so we can hear your thoughts and so other people can hear your thoughts. And it helps with the algorithm to make this episode and this show more widely available. We appreciate you, and we appreciate the feedback that we receive all the time and the people who reach out to us. It means the world to us to have you actually take a moment of your day and put down some words for us. It's always surprising when people are like surprised that we respond, but of course we're going to respond. You took the time to talk to us, so why shouldn't we take the time to talk to you? Right?
I totally agree with you, Dave. Couldn't agree more.
Okay. So on that note, everybody, hope you had a nice month and Easter, if you celebrate Easter, and St. Patrick's Day, if you celebrate St. Patrick's Day, happy April.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, bye.